tight. Hold your kitties tight. It is snowing in Wyoming. Yes, I said snowing. It's been like summer here all week, and now it is snowing. This is Mr. Michael Dean.
It's global warming.
It's global snowing. Yeah, man. So today we are interviewing Nikolai from the BitShares DNS project for the first hour. BitShares does for business what Bitcoin did for money. It says on their website, bitshares.org. And in full disclosure, I've been doing a little part-time consulting for these folks. And so, Nikolai, welcome.
Hey.
And we got Davi Barker over there, too. You got Davi?
Good morning.
Yeah. Davi does Bitcoin, not bombs, shiny badges, and the government tried to shut him down by fondling his Bitcoin at the TSA, and it only brought attention to everything he's doing. And that's kind of... Man, that Streisand effect. You should make a t-shirt and of you getting felt up for Bitcoin at the TSA and call it the Streisand effect shirt.
Well, to be the Streisand effect, it would have to be a t-shirt that said, don't read this t-shirt, and there then everyone go. Would read it.
Well, that's like my new torrent, don't torrent the fiends, don't torrent the fiends ad. Have you heard that yet?
No, I haven't.
You'll probably hear it in this hour, but I will stop cutting into this hour. And Nikolai, what is BitShares?
Okay, so BitShares is basically monetizing all the cases for blockchains. So it's useful to start by explaining what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is interesting because there's this new technology that lets you come to the consensus about the state of the system, which in Bitcoin is just who has how much money. Everyone can kind of come to consensus and agree to it without having a central authority like a clearinghouse or something that does all the bookkeeping. So this has a lot more applications than just Bitcoin, and there's a bunch of Bitcoin 2.0 projects kind of working in this direction, and we're one of them. And we're unique in that we take each application that we can think of and we give it a separate blockchain, and then we carefully design the system so that the equity kind of represents a stock in the blockchain service and lets you capture some of the income that it's making.
Thank you. That is the best and most concise description I've heard of BitShares.
Yeah, I think I get it.
Yeah. BitShares is it's a very forward-thinking project / set of products, and it's kind of massive to understand, and I think that a lot of people don't get it. Because there's not much up front that says what you just said. And that's one of the things I've been doing is trying to encourage you guys to get that kind of thing right up front. So it does not work on the Bitcoin blockchain. It works on its own blockchains, plural. Mm-hmm. And it is a Bitcoin-type technology, what people are calling mm-hmm. Bitcoin 2.0. I'm calling that Web 4.0. I don't know if that'll catch on, and you guys can use it if you want. Uh-huh. Or not. My reason for saying that is, you know, the web, and it came out in late 93, 94, was the web. And then, but you couldn't really have a website unless you knew HTML and you had a, you know, web server and you had to be a bit of a geek. And then Web 2.0 came out like 99, 2000, somewhere around there, to where you had social networking, you didn't have to have your own website. And you could communicate with other people. And that was groundbreaking because all of a sudden it was kind of like the TV was talking back. And, you know, that took 6 or 7 years. And then a lot of things were called Web 3.0. Like that was a common marketing term that wasn't accurate for someone who would come out with, like, you know, cat food delivered via UPS over the social network. And it wasn't really Web 3.0, but I really believe that Web 3.0 was Bitcoin because it was the first vast, vast increase in technology over the internets because it freed up money to where you didn't need a central authority to deal with it. It was kind of the final decentralization, you know, and it is pseudo-anonymous. It's not completely anonymous, and there's people working on it like Cody Wilson's Dark Wallet, which I haven't been able to get to work, but I guess some people have. So then there's I really think that the Bitcoin 2.0 projects are what I'm calling Web 4.0 because I really think they are the vast change next forward. And there's a bunch of them out there, and I've looked at a lot of them, and I think BitShares is the one I think it has the most chance of any of them. I'm not going
to. It sounds like
I'm not going to denigrate any of the other ones. And I was kidding about. I haven't even tried Dark Wallet, but I think it'll work.
It sounds like you're saying BitShares is sort of like an incubator for creating other blockchains with other functions. Is that right?
Sort of. The BitShares Foundation it sort of plays that role. All the dApps that we're building are based on the same source code, which is the BitShares toolkit, and that provides a shell dApp, which is basically the same exact functionality as Bitcoin, but it's written in a way where it's much easier to extend to make your own blockchain that performs some specialized service.
Okay.
What are the dApps that you have now working on, that you're working on now? There's five of them, right, so far?
About that much, yes. So right now, the ones that are actively being worked on is BitShares DNS, or .p2p is actually the name of the first blockchain we're making there.
Which is kind of, I've called a namecoin killer. It's it's for distributed DNS without a central authority, right?
Right. So it's actually only targets a subset of what Namecoin is trying to do. But I think that that's like the 99% use case is to use it as a TLD. So that's the one we're doing first. And then the other DAC that is under active development is BitShares X, which is a decentralized exchange. And then a couple that are in the pipeline right now are a lottery DAC. I want to do a poker DAC, which lets you do poker without a host, which is really interesting that you're even able to do that.
Of a game would be really interesting. It could be done.
Yeah, so there's like you can do trusted price feed. Price feeds, and that lets you do like prediction and betting and stuff. You can have prediction markets. You can also have we have a competitor to Counterparty and MasterCoin coming up called BitShares Me, which is basically people issue their own assets. If you know how Counterparty and MasterCoin work, then you already know what this is. And then there's also, there's this music DAC, which is interesting because they want to try to come up with a model where fans can invest in the musician's success and get paid off. And cut out all the middlemen in the process. And it's sort of interesting because I think it uses a model similar to a prediction market also, but I don't know the details there.
And then there's Quixote, which is for ID, right?
Yeah, but that's not a DAC technically because it doesn't have shares and it doesn't facilitate trades of any kind. It's just a blockchain. It's more like Namecoin than anything, honestly.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You said that BitShares DNS you're saying is only doing DNS and not any of the other applications that people have done with Bitcoin? I mean, with Bitcoin?
Well, kind of. .p2p is doing only a top-level domain as its application. BitShares DNS is actually, we overloaded that term to mean decentralized namespace services. So we're actually going to try to tackle problems like identification or like named keys or other stuff like that.
Yeah, because Namecoin can do things like that. There's a lot of things that I've seen in the works for Namecoin that have not come to fruition after 3 years, but there's a lot of good ideas out there with it. Are you going to be able to put onion.onion Tor addresses in BitShares DNS?
Yeah.
Cool. Davi, you had a question?
No, I'm kind of just listening. I think I get it. It sounds really interesting. I guess so. All of these are sort of separate projects that you're working on. They're not all on like one blockchain. They're all independent blockchains, right? So,
right.
Could they potentially fracture? Like, could they become separate independent projects, or are they all sort of like run under BitShares as a company?
Well, that's the idea, is that they're supposed to all fracture and become separate. They're totally separate industries, and really the only thing they have in common is that they have this core code, this like networking, peer-to-peer stuff that has to work. And they all, here's where all the people working on this are, so you would work together naturally just because you're trying to move this space forward. But they, all the different DAXs sort of have their own problems that they need to solve.
So the BitShares developer kit is like the robin's nest, and you build them in the nest, and then they go off and fly and make their own nests.
Yeah, basically.
What are you ripping up there?
Oh, I have just some paper on the table.
It's coming through loud and clear. Davi, you got a follow up?
Yeah, I just which one of these projects would you say you work on the most?
So I work on BitShares. So I work on .p2p the most.
Okay, which right is now, the name coin killer, as we're calling it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then, but right now, I'm actually working more on just the core BitShares toolkit code, which is like for all the decks.
And when is that coming out?
So we don't like to say dates ever because
that's smart. That's
right
smart.
Now, yeah. Right now, we have a 100% failure record for meeting our own deadlines. So we're not going to say any more dates. But the idea is that we should have in June when I start full time, we're going to be quickly iterating with a working test network for .p2p. And then also there's going to be BitShares XT, which is the first DAC related to the exchange that's going to launch. Should be launching like during the summer also.
Just I guess just for the audience who for whom this may all be new ideas, can you explain what a DAC is?
Yeah, so that's just what we call it stands for Decentralized Autonomous Company. That's just what we call a service on a blockchain. We use that metaphor. It's not actually a company. It's not a centralized company. We use that metaphor to get people to start thinking in terms of blockchain services, in terms of like who's producing and consuming value. Mm-hmm. So right now, all these altcoins that are coming out, they all are just like variations on how are we going to give away coins,
yeah.
Like different mining algorithms right. or whatever. But none of them are successfully capturing the value provided by the DAC.
Right. And so what you mean, I guess what you mean by decentralized is sort of like Bitcoin in that way. It's like a program or a protocol that is not a corporation or a company. It exists sort of as a program that's been released into the wild. Mm-hmm. But these ones are being crafted or designed to fulfill a service before they're released. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
How does the success of one DAC increase the value of another DAC, or doesn't it?
Well, they all have, they kind of share the brand name, sort of BitShares. So there's that. And when one succeeds and there's more development effort being put in because of that, any overlapping development obviously helps all the other DAX. But also there's this, ProtoShares and AngelShares funding model, which I guess we can talk about after this break.
Yep. We're going to go to the market, sell some things, come back and talk about new ways to sell some things and move things around on the Freedom Fiends with Davi Barker and our guest Nikolai from BitShares.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's at the Circle Pine Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to miplc.org.
This is Michael Dean on the Michael Dean Before Dark Show, also known as Freedom Fiends. And today my co-host is Davi Barker, and we're interviewing Nikolai from the BitShares Project. BitShares does for business what Bitcoin did for money. Explain to us a little more, Nikolai, how the funding model works with the Angel Shares.
Right. So first I'm going to back up and talk about a little bit about the theory of DAX. So for a DAX to work, it has to be 100% open source. You have to be able to see everything that it's doing. Otherwise, you can't trust it. But this also means that it's very, very easy for anyone to clone it and make their own DAC. Just fork your code, launch their own blockchain.
Sure.
So the success of a DAC depends largely on its network effect and the consensus that this is the real version and not someone else's. If I launched a clone of Bitcoin and called it Bitcoin, it would just be an altcoin that no one uses. We kind of recognize this in advance, and we recognize that if you make a DAC and someone clones it and gets a much better initial distribution that kicks off the network effect, you'll kind of be left in dust with all the development you did. So,
okay, let's say somebody started to put DNA strands on a blockchain to make them kind of openly, publicly studyable without having to go through the peer review process. That you're saying, like, if somebody did one of those and then someone else did it better, that would become the winner in the race.
Right. Because the whole point is that there's no barriers to entry anywhere. What we want to do is we want to come up with ways to initially distribute the shares in a way that is most likely going to guarantee the success of the DAC. And one way we can do this while also adding value in a different way is we have something called angel shares, which basically anyone who wants to put their money and resources into developing this space, I guess, can invest their money. And then when you donate Bitcoin, the transaction is recorded in the blockchain. So that's sort of like a mailing list for allocating your initial shares in a DAC. And the value proposition here is look, here are all the early adopters in the space, all the big players who are interested in this and would help you succeed and have the connections and all that. Mm-hmm. And also just a really wide user base of tech-savvy users who would be interested in helping you develop. Here they are. There are people who own angel shares, and there are people who own the other proto equity you have, which is proto shares. So proto shares is distributed with a standard mining model. So it's just an altcoin that's available right now on an exchange and you can buy. And angel shares is a model much more like MasterCoin, where basically people donate over a certain period of time, and then each day the donation, some number of angel shares are sort of credited to the donator addresses in the Bitcoin and proto shares blockchains. And then people can use those wallets to redeem their shares later.
One of the ways that makes a lot of sense. One of the ways, if I'm is it correct to say that one of the ways use is encouraged with a particular DAC is that there are small transaction fees in doing anything on it, and that helps everybody who's on that blockchain?
Yeah. So one of the DAC's source of income is transaction fees. Yes, and then. So what happens with income, it gets spent mostly on, it goes to as dividends to shareholders. So it basically gets every time you interact with the DAC in a way where it can take your money and you're willing to trade with it, it sends that money back to everyone else who owns the shares.
And that's not true with Bitcoin.
With Bitcoin, it gets sent to people who are mining.
Mining, yeah.
Yep. And this is an important distinction because miners spend a lot of money on power, and they have to cover that cost when they mine. So when we use the DAC metaphor, we say that the DAC is paying for miners, and that's value that could be going to people who own the shares.
And mining is much easier and less energy intensive, right?
No, mining is the what?
Mining.
Oh, yeah. So we have an alternate security model. It's a proof of stake variant.
So you've confused me a little bit. What is replacing mining exactly?
It's a proof of stake variant. So I don't know how much you guys know about blockchain security theory, but proof of stake, which is an alternative to proof of work, was pioneered by Peercoin. And then there are a couple of other 2.0 projects that, or Web 4.0 projects that iterated a bit further. And then we have what we think is the most recent best model.
Is everything pre-mined in a particular DAC?
Yeah, it's 100. Well, in theory, you can do whatever you want, right? So you can have it all be mined if you want. We have them 100% pre-mine, and we have that redistribute it among those proto shares and angel shares that I was talking to you about, and other airdrop targets.
And you call that pre-allocating, which makes more sense and doesn't have the taint of pre-mining in other coins.
Right, it's going to a large group of people.
It's not a problem. Yeah, it's basically like, you know, printing the spreadsheets needed to keep track of everything up front. Mm-hmm. Yep. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Brink of Freedom is a community-based network and magazine whose mission is to provide you with the information you need on your walk to freedom. From homesteading and gardening to tactical and firearms, Brink of Freedom provides everything you will need to gain the knowledge to be self-sufficient. If government doesn't like it, Brink of Freedom will cover it. Come share your knowledge and gain the knowledge of industry professionals within the community. Become a premium member and gain access to unlimited content and discounts on products and services from our merchants. Use the discount code FIENDS at brinkoffreedom.net.
Yeah. Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends. We're building the roads. We're actually building the roads that the flying cars will ride on, because the internet kind of built the roads. And then
we're building the tubes.
We're building the tubes that the new flying cars will fly through. So we're talking to Nikolai. Davi and Barker and I are talking to Nikolai from BitShares. And you have a question, Davi. What is it?
Yeah, I still want to talk about mining a little bit, or whatever we're calling it now. So I understand we're replacing proof of work with proof of stake. And in the Bitcoin blockchain, proof of work is sort of like this complex algorithm that your computer tries to solve, and the first one to solve it wins. And that doesn't really have a value to the human. Like, that serves a function in the protocol to the computer. But the value of mining to the human is that the miners are sort of passively confirming transactions and verifying that the coins all land where they're supposed to land. So what is doing that in the BitShares system? Because I'm assuming you're still conducting – there's still transactions. It's possible to send these shares around, right?
Yeah. So it's important to understand the purpose of mining to begin with. So if you can you can define a longest chain in terms of proof of work, and that makes it difficult to forge a longest chain. And that's the function of proof of stake, which is you're using – transactions. Basically, every time you move coins, you're implicitly voting for the blockchain, you know, the block that transaction gets included in. That stake moving is sort of voting for that version of the blockchain as the longest. And so this provides your long-term model. Okay, given two chains, which one is the correct one? And then there's a second layer of, at any given point in a short, you know, the short-term security, how do we decide which one, you know, all the honest people should just pick as the one that we're going to secure and put into the blockchain? And so in Bitcoin, that's done because the coins are distributed to miners. And because blocks are difficult to produce, there's competition for producing the next block. And so that's sort of like consensus by competition. Here, all the stakeholders just want their blockchain to be secured, right? And they're willing to do their transactions to provide the long-term security. So in the short term, they just need people to pick which order the transactions happened in, right? Like, confirm that this is the set of transactions that we saw and not any other set, and produce a block. And then everyone can pile their stake onto that. So to do that, we have something analogous to mining pools, which are called delegates. I like to call them signing pools because then people get less freaked out about centralization. They're just signing pools. And just like mining pools, they produce blocks one at a time. It's very similar to Next. What they have there, they have deterministic mining, which they're calling forging. It's much like that. It's basically stakeholders pool their stake into these delegates, which produce blocks, and that's what has the network stay in sync. And basically say, these are the new transactions. These are the new transactions.
I'm assuming forge
means to make.
Means metal forge, not forgery forge.
Yeah,
right?
Well, yeah. This is okay. In Next. Yeah, that's in a different Bitcoin 2.0 project.
So mining in BitShares has a different tell me if this is correct. Mining in BitShares has a different purpose than mining in Bitcoin, whereas mining in Bitcoin is part of what I guess creates the value because it's so hard, and mining it is all of it for all of BitShares is going to take years. In BitShares, you do all the mining at once to kind of print out the ecosystem, right? You do it in a couple days or something?
Well, sort of. I mean, people, you're pairing together the distribution of the coins with the blockchain security model, but those are separate ideas. The mining is replaced by the delegated proof of stake. And then the distribution of coins, which in Bitcoin, it kind of has to do with it because you have to pay miners to create the competition. But otherwise, it doesn't really have much to do with the distribution of coins. That is replaced with long-term security from proof of stake.
And you're calling the individual units shares rather than coins, right?
Right.
So yeah. So okay. If I started a new DAC and used the standard model instead of changing the numbers a whole bunch and making it very unique, for a new system, let's say I want to, keep track of, cat food sales over the internet. I'm kidding about that. But, let's say the DNA thing. If I want to do the DNA thing, would all of the shares be created or mined before I even go public with it or tell the public about it?
Right. That's what I actually, yeah, the second point I meant to contrast with that is that, you know, mining is replaced with delegated proof of stake, and then the distribution, just randomly giving the coins out to miners, is replaced with 100% pre-allocation of shares. It's just when you create the DAC, you choose who has how much. And we use the snapshots from our proto DACs and any airdrops we do as our initial distribution. So it has nothing to do with blockchain security model.
I see a possible t-shirt. Have you seen Davi's Bitcoin Not Bombs t-shirt?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an old jet fighter.
It's a B-17 bomber is what it is.
Yes, dropping Bitcoin like a food drop. Maybe you guys should get Davi to make you a BitShares airdrop t-shirt.
Yeah, a share drop
t-shirt. A share drop t-shirt, yeah. So I guess what That's I'm understanding cool. is like instead of with Bitcoin where – you know, basically the coins are printed, the individual units are printed by massive amounts of computing power that mm-hmm. together equal – actually, I've heard that Bitcoin is now the largest networked computer in the world. Like all of the Bitcoin miners and users together is the biggest single pool of computing power in the world.
Yep, and it does nothing. It literally just burns CPU cycles. The whole point is
– So with BitShares, it's more like – you know, in a night or two, you'd kind of print out this empty shell, and then the work of people doing things on it would fill that and make it into ecosystem.
People have this misconception that doing this blockchain requires all this work to be done by computers. It doesn't require anything. You know, you just have to sign things in a particular order.
Yeah. And I guess empty shell wouldn't be a good term. Blank slate. You know, you print out a new ecosystem.
It's like an initial ledger. And then from then on, everyone just appends to the ledger.
There you go.
So what does it look like if I'm getting started? Is it going to open on my computer like a Bitcoin wallet, or what's the interface like?
Yeah. So the interface should be just like with Bitcoin, but of course it has extra features. So you could either have a desktop client or you can have a web wallet. And depending on what the DAC is, you'll have different things you do using those things.
Yeah, the Namecoin wallet looks exactly like the Bitcoin wallet, except it has one other tab for manage names. What is the DAC going to have for the wallet for the DNS DAC?
Right. Well, for .p2p, for the top level domain DAC, you're going to have the shares that you move around. You're going to have a place where you look at domain auctions and place your bids. By the way, we should talk about the anti-squatting and auction mechanics a bit later.
Yeah.
Yeah. A place you place your bids. And then there's also a place for the domains that you do own. You can manage them, like set the value where it points.
And transfer them if you want.
Yeah.
Did you know that with an ICANN registered domain, you know, what I call .ICANN, which is anything but .bit or .p2p, you know, like .com, .org, .net, .uk, they all go through ICANN. Did you know that with ICANN, you can't transfer a domain until 2 months after you've registered it?
Yeah, it's pretty dumb.
I discovered that recently, and it's I guess that's their anti-squatting mechanism, but it's really stupid if you're trying to.
Is that because like a bureaucrat has to physically push paper around? Like, why is that?
they have to fax it to another department, I think, and then they roll that up and put it in a tube that goes through a vacuum tube to another building. And then, squirrels and beavers have to carry it across the pond. No, so what's the anti-squatting mechanism in the BitShares DNS DAC?
Yeah,
right. So the anti-squatting mechanism is basically just that we have price discovery for names. So, the theory is this: with .bit, for example, or even .com. If you think that the value of the namespace is going to go up, and you think that lots of people are going to be using, you know, .bit domains in the future, then the expected return on an individual domain is very high, even though you don't know which small number of domains is going to be the huge payout ones that are going to give you your payout.
Right.
So you want a way to speculate on the value of the namespace. And so if you hold the shares in the .p2p DAC, then you're going to make dividends on all the other domains, sort of, right? All the ones that get sold while you hold it. And so then the other half to this is, okay, well then we have to make the domain sell for their for a lot, and by that we just mean sell for their actual market price, so that people won't be incentivized to buy them up cheap and then try to resell them at their market price later.
So, let's say I've got a BitShares DNS client, right? And I go in and I go to the tab that's whatever the equivalent of managed names is, and I create a URL for myself, right? Like I grab bitcoin.bombs.p2p. How is the system going to tell me whether or not I'm squatting or legitimately own that thing?
Right. So how it works is you have to win it on an auction, but it's not a totally standard auction. How it works is this. You have your client and we ask you, okay, what is the highest that you are genuinely willing to pay for this domain? And you're incentivized to be honest because the next person has to bid higher if you bid high. So you're incentivized to be honest. If you don't win the domain, then you get not only your bid back, but you also get a difference between your bid and the next person's bid. And if a domain has never been bid on, then that different the ratio of the difference you get can actually be expressed in terms of your bid. So in other words, if you don't get the name you want and it's never been bid on, then you get like, say, 30% of your bid back on top of what your original one was. So you make a profit.
To claim the name, I have to publicly announce the name and say, hey, who wants to bid on? I have to put it up for auction before I can claim it. Is that right?
Yeah. You're basically making the first bid. All the domains are in an auction, but they start at zero. And you make the first bid.
Right, but that would notify somebody, right? So I can't like secretly like register coke.p2p and then say, hey, Coke, I own your name. Like I would have to announce and put into auction coke.p2p, and Coke would say, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah,
and then exactly. They would outbid me probably.
Right. And so there's an incentive to bid domains up because you get a fraction of the difference. And then if you bought your domain for too much, you're a speculator and you're a little too ambitious, then you have a concrete incentive to sell that domain back at a loss because you're not getting the dividends from the sale of all the other domains that you would get if you had the equivalent value of the shares. So what we should see is a bunch of domains basically bounce around in this marketplace until someone comes in and puts a bid up that's higher than a little bit higher than its market price that no one else is willing to outbid them on. And then once you own it for a couple of days, your ownership is locked in. And then after that, it's yours and renewals are free or they cost a transaction fee and you own it for life.
And you could sell it, obviously.
Yeah.
It's fairly brilliant. It basically discourages squatting and encourages the person who probably should have the domain to have the domain.
It kind of makes a productive industry out of squatting too.
Exactly. So the point is there's an opportunity for people to profit if they're good at correctly pricing domains. So instead of having these registrars that all sell every single domain for $10, you could make a profitable business if you consistently beat the market with domain name pricing.
Have you ever wanted to move to the land of LibPair? Libertarian paradise, where there's fun for everyone that doesn't initiate force on others, fun for the kids, parties for the adults, buy and sell in silver or Bitcoin, scenic hikes and gun shoots, speeches to educate us all. The Porcupine Freedom Festival is LibPair in the White Mountains of New Hampshire for a week this summer, June 22nd to 29th. Get your tickets now before there's no more room. Porkfest, the event of a lifetime. Porkfest.com. That's PORCFEST.com.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to torrent
Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Oh, yeah. This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, with Dobby Barker. And we're talking to Nikolai for BitShares. Final segment here before we go to the second hour. With Dobby and I, talking about cats and liberty and guns. So, go ahead, Dobby.
We're not talking about any of those things
yet. I am. I will.
So, I get it. I think I finally get it. We're talking about turning the sort of industry of squatting, which is sort of like they're a breed of trolls on the internet, into a productive industry by essentially using the mechanisms of the Price is Right. You're bidding. And so the Price is Right is essentially like you're guessing on the price and you want to get as close to the price as possible without going over. And if you go over, you lose. So if a troll if a squatter wanted to like make money on a name that wasn't his goal would be to bid as high as possible without going over. Because if he goes over, he gets this name and he's not the honest bidder, and so it's no good to him. So his goal is essentially to put as much value into the name while still like sort of trying to predict what the honest bidder would bid on it. Right, because right. he'll get some of the return if that happens. If he's outbid,
and if he outbids yep. you on Bitcoin.bombs or outbids me on Freedom Fiends, you know .p2p, he's not going to hold on to it, and he'll probably end up selling it a short while later for right. less than he paid for it. So it really
he'll still lose because he's not the one who's interested in building a website. There, I am.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I meantime, might even get it for less than my original bid.
So it is like the game show, The Price is Right, and it makes the price right, literally.
Yeah, I mean, it is introducing a price mechanism, whereas like right now an ICANN website, they're sort of like price fixed, right? They all cost the same amount because they're distributed by this sort of agency.
Mm-hmm. Which is a problem of Namecoin and part of why it didn't succeed, because they had a new way of doing, the registrar for, you know, holding the names and the associated IP addresses, but they copied the price mechanism of .ICANN domains. And that's part of why they're right. failing.
So where do I go if I want to bid on a name? What do I do?
So right now, .p2p is not out yet. But
okay. So how do I make it happen? Who do I contribute to get my name?
How do you right. How does someone get involved with the whole thing with BitShares?
Right. So if you recall, a big part of the pre-allocation is going to go to Angel Shares and Proto Shares. So you can either buy Proto Shares on a normal cryptocurrency exchange, or you can go to donate to Angel Shares, which you can access. Just Google Angel Shares, and it's the first link, and you'll see like big thing, BitShares, AGS. And so this is where you donate, and that money goes to funding DAC development.
Give us a domain name, because I don't want to rely on that it's the right one okay. coming up first it's every time.
AGSExplorer.com.
Thank you.
Okay, and so if you donate here, the wallet from which you sent your Bitcoin or your Proto Shares, that becomes a wallet which, when .p2p is released, you'll be able to import it and claim your part of the initial allocation.
Okay. Cool.
I like it. So in the last couple of minutes here, tell us a little bit about Nikolai. You just finished college, right?
Yeah, three days ago.
Yeah,
oh, congratulations.
Had my last final.
Yeah, he did an interview the night before, like 11 hours before his last final. That is dedication, man. How'd you do on the final?
Hopefully I did well, because I need to pass that class to graduate.
What's your degree? What is your degree going to be in?
Computer science.
Of course it is. And what is it, a bachelor's?
Yeah, it's a bachelor's.
Cool, man. Do you have cats? That's an important question for me.
No, I have a dog that looks like a cat, though.
What kind is it?
It's a Yorkie poodle hybrid.
Oh, man. That is a cat dog for sure. Yeah. Davi?
Yep.
As far as my questions?
Yeah. Personal questions.
Where are you from?
Oh, man, that's an interesting question. Right now, I live in Virginia, or my family lives in Virginia. So right now, I'm in Pittsburgh, because I'm still at Carnegie Mellon. Then I'm going to go to Virginia, because that's where my parents live. Then I'm going to go to Virginia in Blacksburg, because that's where Dan and the other BitShares guys are. And then, I don't know, then I'm going to move to, like, South America or something.
Wow. So you're an expat?
Well, not yet, but we'll see.
A pre-expat. He's pre-allocating his expatting.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved in either Bitcoin or cryptocurrency in general?
Just from searching about it on the internet. So the like next generation projects, I was already just proactively searching, because I understood like blockchain services and was trying to find other people who were doing it. And then back in the day, Bitcoin, I just heard about it on the internet somewhere.
How'd you get to BitShares from there?
Oh, well, so I just found Dan Larimer and his group by searching, like Googling for blockchain applications. And then I started working with them and they brought me on.
Cool, man. Yeah, I think they're the ones, I think the team is really organized, and I think that they can come out on top on this whole Web 4.0, Bitcoin 2.0. That's my feeling from working with them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And thanks a lot for coming on, Nikolai.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Yep, and we'll have Daniel Larimer, the founder of BitShares, on Wednesday night and next Sunday. Two interviews this week with the man behind the whole scene on the Freedom Fiends. We'll be back for hour two after this trip
Worms.
To the market. Worms. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair or Libertarian Paradise and help me work toward it. Who will build the roads? You and me. Who will draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
Looking for some summer fun in Wyoming? A camping weekend with liberty-minded folks for a barbecue, tubing on a river, a live band, and some quality trigger time? Then join us in Guernsey from May 29th to June 1st for the 2014 Free State Wyoming Jamboree. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, Free State Wyoming encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the Cowboy State. Bring your family to the Free State Wyoming Jamboree. For more details, visit freestatewyoming.org.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Holla, 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 holler, holler back. I got to holler back. This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. We're here on the inner tubes and the radios. I love being on radio. That means that random people who would never, ever, ever find us on the internet will hear what we say, at least in the 10-minute drive from the VFW hall to church to the Walmart. Hi, Davi Barker.
Good morning. How's it going?
It's good. It's wonderful. And that was just the best interview I've ever heard about BitShares. You heard a few of them, and they did.
Yeah, I did.
That answered questions.
I didn't understand it until I got to actually ask my questions.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's kind of like explaining the internet. Whereas
it is a huge topic. We really like. We talked about DNS, and there were like five other services that we could have gone and talked about.
But. Yeah. Yeah. On BitShares. Yep. Yep. And that was really good. And we're going to have Daniel Larimer, the founder and I guess inventor of BitShares, on Wednesday night on the Freedom Fiends with Lusander Fien. And I are going to interview Daniel Larimer Wednesday night at, you know, that's Thursday morning, East Coast time, 1 a.m., basically, 1 to 2. And the show is 1 to 3. That's the night for the Freedom Fiends after dark. And this is the Freedom Fiends before dark. And we're going to have Daniel Larimer on again. And that'll be the end of the BitShares interviews. We're not going to do all BitShares all the time, but I really wanted to get a solid understanding of this for our audience, because I think it's going to be, I think it could be the next big thing. I'm not going to bet all my ponies on it, because I kind of made that mistake with Namecoin. And really, it was just like, I was dazzled by her beauty, Namecoin. And then she didn't turn on me. She just kind of laid there. She just kind of didn't really do what was delivered and promised. And I really think a lot of it has to do with, well, let me just say, I won't say what's bad about Namecoin. I'll say what's good about BitShares. I think they have great people who communicate well with each other and are willing to listen to good ideas that come from outside their camp. And I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Yep.
So where are we going?
We're going to Bitcoin.
Keep talking Bitcoin.
Yeah. And, you know, if you don't use Bitcoin or know what Bitcoin is, you should check into it. And if you do, do know what it is, we're going to tell some funny stuff about it. But if you don't know what it is, it's a decentralized currency. It's kind of like emailing money to people without having to go through PayPal or the Federal Reserve. It's kind of like magical internet money that people use to buy and sell whatever they want without it being easily traceable. And it is kind of traceable in a way, but it's pseudo-anonymous, which means that there's no name attached to it. There's no bank account attached to it.
Right.
But people can...
And you can take steps to make it more anonymous than it is by default, too.
Yeah. And if you don't get what we're talking about Bitcoin, we're not going to do this all the time, but enjoy the fact that we're talking about government tyranny, and it not only involves to you know, guns, which is have existed for in some form or another for, you know, nearly 1,000 years. And it not only applies to free speech, which, you know, speech has existed for tens of thousands of years, and free speech is something we're all concerned about. But it all also exists. Tyranny also affects emerging technologies. And one of the kind of cool things about emerging technologies is they emerge and change and warp and mutate in good ways and evolve so quickly. Governments can't keep up. So governments, Bitcoin's been around for what, 4 years, 5 years?
2009 it came out. That's okay. 5 years.
Okay. And it really just kind of became a player, a big player in the past year. And the value went from the first
zero. Year, it started with
the
zero.
The first year it was out, people were, you know, there were 100 nerds on the internet mining it and talking about it and talking about how it solved this age-old problem of being able to do decentralized ledgering with money or as money. And the first, you know, a year later, somebody bought a pizza for 10,000 Bitcoin, and that was the first commercial use of it.
Yeah, I like to call it the first supper.
The first supper. Well, I also call that the pizza problem with emerging Bitcoins, with emerging cryptocurrencies. And I actually thought of a way to make a new coin and solve the pizza problem. And I'm still kind of interested in doing this. I wanted to call it Worm Coin. And because we say worms on the Freedom Fiends instead of word, it's our jokey way of saying, I agree, I concur, brother. Or it's also like aloha, like hello and goodbye. So I wanted to make Worm Coin. And what I was going to do, and I'm still willing to do this, if someone wants to come up with a Worm Coin with me, is take it from the gate for advertising time on the Freedom Fiends, because we sell a lot of ad. We have more ad space sold than ever, but we still got a couple open ad spots, and we would be willing to. I was talking about taking this new coin that does not yet exist for ad time, so it would instantly solve the pizza problem out of the gate. Which of the 300 or 400 Me Too coins out there, there's really, you know, very few of them have become valued at anything over fractions of cents.
Sure.
Yep. So you
so someone out there make a Worm Coin.
Well, talk to me first. So you sent me something that said good news, and you were kidding, and it was Feds approved Bitcoin for campaign contributions.
Yeah, well, there's two stories, and I actually think that they are the opposite of the way they are spun. And this one is presented as like really good news that the feds, by feds I mean the Federal Election Commission, has FEC unanimously approved
or FEC.
FEC.
Yeah.
FEC has unanimously approved the use of Bitcoin for political donations. And some people are kind of celebrating this. And I think this is bad news. I don't think this is good for Bitcoin. I don't think this is good for politics. And, you know, down in the body of the article, I found the reason. This is the hook. Or this is this is the hook in the worm. The worm was Bitcoin adoption, Bitcoin being used for, that's all good news. Here's the hook. The hook is the commissioners imposed several conditions. Among them, no anonymous Bitcoin contributions would be allowed. And the campaign treasurers must here, catch this, scrutinize the donations for evidence of illegality. So that means that by giving Bitcoin to this candidate, I'm opening myself up to an audit.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
And you have to attach a name to a pseudo-anonymous Bitcoin address. You know, it just sounds like a way to harvest identities to track.
It's a Trojan horse.
Yeah.
And there's feds in this horse.
There's feds. This horse is full of feds. Yeah, feck goons. I wonder if the feck goons, I wonder if they have their own police. I mean, these days, every government agency almost has its own police. There is an unbelievable
Department of Education has a SWAT team.
Yeah, there is an unbelievable number of job descriptions that didn't exist, you know, before 9/11 probably, that can arrest you now. Now, postal workers have always had their own police, and my wife was threatened tacitly at gunpoint by one of them. She used to work for Dictaphone. DJ, you want to tell this story? Okay. She used to work for Dictaphone, which doesn't exist anymore. It was the first, like, office supply recording dictation equipment company, and she had a job where she had to go in and talk to, you know, a regional postmaster for Southern California. They were buying a bunch of dictaphone equipment, and you know, she walked into the office. He pulled out his badge and gun in his holster and like plopped them down on his desk and said, "Is this going to take long?"
Wow.
And she said, "Not if you put that away." But that's basically a postal inspector threatening her at gunpoint while doing business with her. Think yeah. about that, man.
I read a story recently about a cop that like there was a guy taking too long in a drive-thru, so he got out of his car, pointed his gun at the driver, and told him to move on.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the guy like getting lunch at a McDonald's or something.
You know, I've been watching Mad Men, which takes place in the 60s, and there's no political correctness. Have you ever seen it?
I've seen a couple episodes, yeah.
And there's a comment in there that a Jewish merchant makes, and this is nothing about against Jews. In a way, it's kind of praising Jews, but it's talking about he says, "Yeah, I think the reason that we've done so well, you know, without a homeland for so many centuries is that we're good at doing business with people who hate us." And that probably includes the government. I mean, think about that. You're doing like what would otherwise be voluntary exchange of services, and the guy pulls out his gun and threatens you with it. Like, yep, I got it. There's a gun in the room.
You know, on the table.
Yeah. How many analogies are put into literal light there? Like, yeah, there's a gun in the room, as libertarians like to say when describing the government, and it's on the table. Like, it's willing to be used. He's willing to use it. Yep.
So the thing that gets me about this is the anonymity of Bitcoin is on the spender's side. It's my job to be anonymous when I spend Bitcoin. It's not your job to be anonymous when you receive Bitcoin. So to tell a candidate he's not allowed to receive anonymous Bitcoins means he can't have a public address. He can't have a public donation address. People have to fill out forms to send him Bitcoin.
It's going to have to go through an exchange that's in bed with the government, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're also going to have to come up with a protocol for scrutinizing donations for evidence of legality, because currently that doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, this to me looks like a
government plot.
This is a worm on a hook. That's what it is.
I like the Trojan horse, and that horse is full of feds and the feck goons. Feck. Doesn't feculent mean smelly and rotten?
Maybe it sounds like it's definitely that. Not pleasing to
it's
the ear. Not,
it's the amount of pia. It just sounds horrible. You feck goon. Yeah.
Yeah. So the other story is this Operation Choke Point thing, and people called this bad news, and it's nasty.
It's good news.
It's good news. And what it is so I'm going to put this in quotes. The article doesn't put this in quotes, but the DOJ is quote unquote encouraging banks and online payment processors to close accounts of businesses associated with things they don't like firearms, ammunition.
Yeah. Initially it was Operation Choke Point. And first of all, you have to understand that encouraging a bank to not do business basically means they're walking in. They're not putting their gun on the table. They're putting their SWAT team on the table and saying, "We encourage you not to do business with these people."
Well, here's what it is. It's in the article. What encouraging means is flooding companies that provide processing services to those industries with subpoenas, civil investigative demands, and other burdensome and costly legal demands. So this is a proverbial gun on the table, but it's a gun on the table.
Well, you have to understand, people have to understand that a bank in America is basically a branch office of the Federal Reserve. So it doesn't take – and there's so much regulation in banking and there's so much money involved that they're absolutely going to comply with any request, even if it's not backed with a legal threat. If they just call them up and say, "We'd really – I believe that if they just say, "Hey, we don't want you doing business with these people," they won't. And originally they were going after –
they just closed the accounts.
Originally it was – this is an example of mission creep. Originally it was – you know, people who funded terrorism, or probably were believed to, and people who were engaged in fraud. And then they expanded it to things they didn't like that aren't really...
Here's the thing. On this list, home-based charities.
Yeah. Pornography between consenting adults. Gun sales. Yeah, probably
telemarketing.
Bitcoin. Telemarketing. Payday loans. Things that are legitimate, man.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. My co-host today is Davi Barker from Bitcoin Not Bombs and shinybadges.com. You know, that really annoyingly catchy ad. It's a great ad, but I hate it because it's so effective. Like, I hear it once and for 3 days I'm humming it.
It's a brain worm.
It's a brain worm. And then there are negative brain worms like, oh, feds approve campaign contributions. So Davi's going to tell us a little more about feds and the statists who love them.
So here's why I say this is good news. What I mean is why Operation Choke Point is good news.
Let's explain it a little more. We didn't really explain it. It's a... widespread Department of Justice. Here's the interesting thing. The FBI, literally their original mission statement was to protect interstate commerce. Back in the day when it was people robbed banks during the Depression. And literally they'd jump in a car, the local or state police would chase them. And if they could get to the state line, the police had to stop at the state line. So the FBI was formed, and the original mission statement that they said was their purpose for existing was protecting interstate commerce. I think most of what federal three-letter agencies do across the board is interfere with interstate commerce, you know? And that's the crime they used to charge people with, was interfering with interstate commerce. And now they basically...
Only we can do that.
Yeah, yeah. So the federal departments of interfering with interstate commerce, you know, what they're doing is they started this thing called Operation Choke Point, and the original mission description of it was shutting bank accounts, making it hard to do legitimate, quote unquote, air quotes, business for people that did, you know, fraud or, you know, supporting terrorism. And also the supporting terrorism tag, that's used on a lot of people who never even talk to anyone who does anything with terrorists and have nothing to do with them. So, you know, they like to paint these horrible things on people. And we're going to get into a little later about the false flag operations that three-letter government agencies like to do, where they say they stopped a terrorist, but it's really they found somebody and talked him into doing something horrible and gave him something they said was a bomb, and it's usually a big box of sugar or something. And then they say, we stopped a terrorist plot that we started.
We organized.
Yeah. So Operation Choke Point had immediate mission creep to where they weren't just going after people doing things that were illegal or immoral. They were also shutting down bank accounts of things that people just don't like, that government people like. They were shutting down people to do legal, legitimate, licensed, you know, business in firearms, payday loans, adult-on-adult pornography for adults. Now, here's another thing, too. If you're against pornography and you think it's a bad thing, don't watch it. But don't ask your government to go after it, because it'll end up getting your guns taken away. And the same thing's true with weed and drugs and anything you don't like that doesn't have a victim. And they will lie to you and say it all has victims. They will say, we have to stop the porn and we have to stop the pot because it leads to violence and crime. And like, the only reason pot leads to crime is because it's illegal.
So here's the thing, like, pornography and gun sales got the headlines, but if you look at the list of industries that they've targeted, some of them are completely benign. Like, coin dealers is on the list, dating services is on the list, fireworks sales, not firearms, fireworks sales. This one gets me, home-based charities, because that's me.
You know, the dating service thing, too. I'm wondering, like, generally when governments try to shut things down, there's usually a monopoly component to it. Either they're protecting someone else's monopoly who's a contributor to them in some way, or they want to run their own one. I'm wondering if this is
going to... You think this works for a federal dating agency?
The White House date, the I Love Obama dating agency. You know, like, you upload a picture and a 50-word essay on why you love Obama more than other people, and then...
What we've done is we've examined your voting record and partnered you with people who vote similar to you.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So here's why I say this is good news. This is good news because Bitcoin. Like, if all of these industries are having problems with conventional legacy banking services or PayPal or things like that because the government is breathing down their neck, then these industries belong in the Bitcoin space. And it just, I mean, Bitcoin is being your own bank. It's like, so this is sort of like what Ben Stone says. Like, part of our job is to expose the incompetence of government. And so if these industries are all being targeted by this completely wasteful and arbitrary government policy, then they should just abandon those legacy banking systems and move into a financial system that can't be targeted by government.
Yeah. We'll have more about goons and the statists who love them when we come back after this trip to the market with some merchants who may take Bitcoin. Worms.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yes. Delicious liberty on the hoof. With Michael Dean and Dobby Barker. So I talked a little yesterday about the governor of Wyoming bringing a bunch of Somali refugees to Wyoming. I didn't say it like that. That's how some people are saying it. But basically, you know, he partnered with some refugee resettlement service, part of the federal government, the Department of Health and Human Services. And there's a PDF online of, here's proof that he did it. And it's his signature saying, yes, bring these 200 former child soldiers to Wyoming. And I don't know. The only concerns I have about this are, A, I don't think the government should do anything like this. B, they're putting them all on welfare. And it's nothing against the people. It's like, I'm complaining about this system that can just decide who moves where and spend a bunch of my money to do it. And I'm a little concerned about the child soldier thing on their resume. But, you know, I give people the benefit of doubt until they do something. I'm just wondering if they're going to be, like, armed and turned into, you know, Obama said he wanted to have a civilian military force at one point. I'm wondering if this is it.
Wow, that would be an incredible YouTube video if there was, like, lines of sort of militarized young Somali immigrants singing some Obama Christmas carol and marching around.
That would make a good campaign ad for Jeb Bush, probably.
Well, that's what it would happen. It would have to happen that way. I feel like there were videos like that around for a while when he was first elected that people made a fuss about. For me, the problem wasn't like that people were so gung-ho about this particular president. It was the idea that schools like make these little cheer squads for politicians in general that bothered me.
Yeah. I don't think Obama's a secret Muslim either, because I think he kills too many Muslims. And, you know, people say, well, some Muslims kill other Muslims, but he's an equal opportunity Muslim killer. He kills all kinds of them.
Yeah, I don't want him. I don't think the Muslims want him.
Yeah.
So I don't. This is interesting. It's sort of like I want open borders. If people can get over here and they want to move here and they want to sort of make a life for themselves, I think that should be as easy as possible, and the government shouldn't stand in their way.
I think your nationality should be as easy as switching your phone company.
Yeah. So it's a phone call and a sort of pushy telemarketer.
Yeah, I can just imagine, like, I know you're eating dinner, but how would you like to become Canadian? Here are the advantages of becoming Canadian. Would you like to become Canadian right now?
Win a trip to Hawaii by becoming Canadian. But this troubles me because it's pushing the other way, right? So it's, I guess I don't know how these people get wrapped up with this organization, but it's like
It was through a church group, some Lutheran... think of the children, Lutheran.com or something. I don't know what it was.
In Somalia, or where's the church?
No, in Wyoming.
Here. So they go to Somalia and recruit immigrants?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, my dad's part of Rotary Club, and they go there and help a lot of people. They dig wells and they bring medicine and bring some education. And but I don't know. And they do a lot of foreign exchange programs. Like my sister, when I was a kid, went to South Africa for a year. And we got a girl from Belgium. We got a girl from Belgium for 6 months, and then a guy named Adolf from Germany for 6 months. I don't believe people are still naming their kid Adolf in Germany, but it happened.
I think it's a crime. Isn't it a crime?
It's probably a crime now, but yeah, I mean, this guy would be 50 years old now, probably. No, older. Let's see. He was like 17 when I was like 7, so he'd be about 60. So yeah, he was named Adolf shortly after World War II, it would seem.
Yeah, so I don't have a problem with that either. If charities or churches want to go somewhere to like a war-torn place and say, hey, let us help you move out of here, like that's how it should work. But why is the government getting involved is my question. Like if the federal government is sort of out of one side of its mouth trying to hinder immigration, why is it out of the other side of its mouth trying to subsidize immigration?
It could be either because they have conflicting private and public agendas, or it could also be that combined with the fact that the federal government is a lumbering beast drowning in the tar pits of not being useful at all and being replaced by, and it's being seen that they're not useful anymore. And it's kind of, you know, I heard when I was a little kid and was interested in dinosaurs, like most kids are, that a brontosaurus was so large and stupid that it could be chewing on its tail and it would take a minute for the signal to get to its head.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I don't know if that's true or
not. That's so hard for me to believe, though, because it's an electrical signal.
Yeah, yeah. So it's but it's a good image for how I think the federal government operates. I mean, there is evidence that the 9/11 attacks... Okay, if you don't buy the 9/11 truther thing, which I don't buy, I think it's the policies of America made it happen. And it's, you know, the guys who did it were horrible. They were horrible, bad people. But there is, there's a lot of evidence out there. I don't even think it's like suspect. I think it's true. I think it's been admitted that, you know, agencies weren't communicating with each other. And like the CIA and the FBI weren't communicating. And that's why Bush formed the Department of Homeland Security to help all of these oversee all these agencies. And, you know, there's a scene in the book Moulin Labe by Boston Tea Party, who we had on here recently. And it's a really funny scene to me. It's where there's an FBI agent coming to Wyoming to put someone in federal prison for something that shouldn't be a crime, having the wrong piece of metal shoulder thing that goes up on his rifle. And when he's going through the DHS, you know, pat down in the airport, the FBI agent is told by a DHS agent, sir, we need to search your shoes. Please take off your shoes. And he says, you're not smart enough to search my shoes. And I kind of wonder if that's how the old school goon agencies look at these new style goon agencies, especially since, not saying anything good about the FBI, but I think you probably had to have a slightly above average IQ to have any position of power at the FBI for a long time. And the DHS tends to literally hire people off of pizza boxes and give them guns. So that's kind of a scary thought.
So I have the thing that makes me nervous about this is that this looks like a playground for false flag terrorism to me. And what I mean by that is in the last two or three years, we've seen a lot of sort of well-armed agencies going into sort of marginalized communities looking for a patsy and then setting them up as a fall guy for a fake terrorist attack so that they can claim that they did something.
Yeah. As somebody said, and it may or may not have been Will Coley, but somebody said they look for the dumbest guy in the mosque. It's probably more like the most – you know, marginalized and like doesn't have any friends and isn't, you know, is young and impressionable and say, hey, you want to be a big man? Put this bomb under that bridge. And they hand him a package that's like a pound, you know, 10 pounds of sugar. And then they arrest him for placing this fake bomb somewhere.
Or putting a backpack in a garbage can.
Literally.
But the other thing is
then they say they stopped terrorist plots, but literally almost all, if not all, of the so-called terrorist plots that have been stopped by the Fed goons since 9/11 have been produced by the Fed goons, and they weren't real plots. The things that have actually
not
been
only
stopped,
that groomed by the Fed goons, people who were not interested. Like there was a case. This was about a year ago where this was also a young Somali kid. And he's like, no, I don't want to do this. I'm going to get a job. I'm moving to Alaska to become a fisherman. And the feds went to Alaska and essentially intimidated that employer into not giving him the job.
Man.
So he remained an unemployed person.
So they interfered with interstate commerce to try to get their false flag.
Because they didn't want to let their patsy leave the state.
Yeah.
Right. They had this plan and he wasn't cooperating. So they had to cut off his avenues of escape. And so I'm just worried when I see this, like you're going to have kids who are from war-torn territory. So there's a PTSD thing going on. There's also going to be a culture shock thing going on because they're coming in large numbers because it's subsidized and they're coming into a culture that's completely foreign than their own. And then on top of that, they're living on welfare, which means they're not getting the job that's going to like give them something to do with their time and their life and a sense of accomplishment. It's not going to like let them develop a life. They're going to have all this free time on their hand in which to be angsty teenagers and be approached by the feds, right?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people who hear this story and criticize it are blaming the Somalis coming here. And think about it too, like if you were in a war-torn region where your only option was probably going to be murdered for someone else's agenda, you would probably welcome anybody who said, yeah, get in this plane, we'll take you somewhere and give you a house.
I'm also kind of conspiratorial about this. Like this says that the refugees were vetted by Homeland Security before they arrived. That makes me think that there's probably somebody who is a behavioral consultant or something on that vetting committee looking for the dumbest kid on the mosque before he even sets foot in the country.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to say any particular agency is going to do anything. I just think that there are people in a lot of federal government agencies who operate that way. You know, you think about the things that have actually been stopped, like the shoe bomber, that was stopped by people. That wasn't stopped by the feds. That was stopped by people on a plane.
Well, even Fed goons get stopped. Here in California, we had an informant in a California mosque that was going around talking about bombing, looking for people. He was an informant and looking for fake, looking to drum up a fake attack, and the Muslims of that mosque sought a restraining order against him and turned him into the feds because he was saying violent things.
Oh, they didn't know he was a Fed.
They didn't know he was a Fed. They thought he was just some new person in their community coming and talking about some sort of violence, and so they turned him in.
And you know, the biggest thing ever that the FBI, I think it was the FBI, the feds claimed to have stopped was the Unabomber, a guy that was actually doing really horrible things to semi-random people. They didn't stop him. What happened was they spent more man hours ever on one person search over a decade than they ever had. A couple newspapers published the guy's manifesto that he sent anonymously to the LA Times and the New York Times. His brother recognized his writing style and some of the phrases he used and called the FBI. So, you know, like, wow. All of their manpower didn't find the guy.
So the media did it.
Yeah, the media did it. It was open sourced. And, of course, they gave a big press conference and said, look at this great work we did. We caught this monster. No, his brother
caught him. The system worked.
Yeah. The system of newspapers worked. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. Is there like a tone in Wyoming that people are accepting or rejecting of these immigrants? Like, what happens? Where do these people go? Do they form enclaves?
I don't really talk to a lot of people, and I don't frequent a lot of forums of any kind. So I don't really know. I know that a couple people are upset about it, and this article that you saw said they're upset about it. But the blame kind of seems to be on the people rather than the government that brought them here.
That's too bad.
Yeah. We'll be back with the final installment for today of the Freedom Fiends. And then we'll be back tonight in 12 hours.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelps from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah, it's Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends. And it's the end of the show, the redemption in the third act. And Davi's going to make some ducats by telling you what he does. And what did you say ducats were, Davi?
Ducats are the soy tablets they serve at Renaissance Fair. If you're a vegetarian and you don't want to eat like a lamb shank or something, they serve ducats, which are these little nuggets of tofu or something.
Okay, but it's actually a gold or silver coin used as trade in Europe for the later medieval centuries until as late as the 20th century. And my wife said Italian money. But of old. So yeah, Sicilian silver coins. Yeah. They're pretty cool.
Well, they just had to come up with some, Ren Fair had to come up with some other vegetarian option because it didn't actually exist in the period.
You know, we just got a blessing from the Pope of Liberty here. Ben Stone, the bad Quaker, just wrote me and said, I really enjoying the show today. The flow is getting better and better.
Is Ben the Pope?
The
Liberty Pope.
Yes. I bless you, my son.
Is that like you go to Porkfest and if the smoke billowing over Ben's RV is white or black?
You've done a good podcast that day. Yes. You know, that is how they show when they've chosen a new Pope. The smoke turns from black to white. But do you ever watch the show Death Clock? Metalocalypse. It's a great animated show. You'd probably really like it. It's about it's kind of like, remember the Partridge Family?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Partridge Family if they were a death metal band that every time they played, their fans died. And they're like and they're the 13th largest economy in the world after Belgium. But when they're in the studio, their studio called Mordhouse, when they're in Mordhouse producing a new record, when the smoke over Mordhouse turns from white to black when the record is complete. Yeah. Okay. So what are your projects and your books?
Well, I've published three books now. So there's Voluntary Islam.
Where can people get them though?
I guess fpp.cc is Free Press Publications.
Okay.
So Voluntary Islam is a collection of essays. Like, some of them are about Islam, some of them are about libertarianism or voluntarism, and then some of them are just about a variety of other things, like my participation in the Tea Party, my participation in the Occupy movement. It's sort of like it's the best of my writing for 2009 to 2010, right? And then went a completely different direction. Survivor Max is a work of fiction. It's about an 12-year-old boy surviving alone in the zombie apocalypse. And you can get that at survivormax.com.
All right.
And the third one, this one just went live today. It's called Authoritarian Sociopathy. It's a short read. It's about 40 pages. And it is an analysis of previous research that's been done on power and authority from a psychological perspective, and then a pitch of a renegade psychological experiment that I've designed to study obedience to police and police brutality. And you can also get that at fpp.cc.
So what do you think about people submitting to authority and the dangers of it, and where do you see it?
I think that the science sort of says that the obedient are more culpable than the tyrant. That
without the obedient, the tyrant would be standing on a street corner yelling at clouds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically.
The Milgram experiment is the famous one. That's the one that showed that 65% of otherwise psychologically healthy Americans would electrocute a stranger to death if someone in a lab coat told them to.
And it's worth noting that there was some proto experiments by the CIA before that as part of MK Ultra, which also involved dosing people with LSD. Think about that. Like, this really illegal drug, it's okay for the government to give it to people without them knowing. But
maybe I should add an MK Ultra chapter.
You really should, because the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski was a volunteer in some of the MK Ultra sponsored experiments that the CIA did at Harvard when he was going to university there, and he was really disturbed by it, and it may have contributed to him, you know, acting on it and being horrible.
So Milgram was inspired to design this experiment by a guy named Adolf Eichmann, who was a Nazi officer. And I guess just go to fpp.cc and check out the titles there. There's a lot of good stuff. Like, even if it's not by me, it's a great publication with lots of like libertarian themed stuff.
Yep, it's a good place. Thanks for being on, Davi Barker, on the Freedom Fiends. The flow.
Absolutely.
The flow has been majestic, according worms. To Ben Stone.
It's a worm flow.
It's a worm flow. Worms. Yep. And we'll be back in 12 hours with Randy England, former prosecutor, now good guy, on the Freedom Fiends After Dark.